this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness and Dentistry. I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I'm a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher, and I'm joined by my very good friend and your co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and thought leader, and together we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And today, get ready to learn about set, strategize, and how to succeed, how to have a new year of goal setting, how to hit those goals, the science behind it, what Martin and I do. It's going to be a really, really exciting episode today that Martin and I are both really excited about. Before we get into that, we have only about a month left on our early bird special for our Lightside Live course. This is May 9th and 10th at Glidewell Lab in Irvine, California. This is a two-day, basically wellness and dentistry event that is truly transformational. It's our favorite days that we speak and educate and hang out with our colleagues from around the world. So to get that early bird special, you have to do it before the end of January 2025. And you can go to wellnessanddentistry.com, look at our links, and you can find that there. Now, let's get into set, strategize, and succeed, a new year of goal setting. Martin, what do you think about this topic?
Oh, I have so many thoughts on this topic. I don't think we have enough time to talk about this topic. No, I'm excited about it because, you know, we picked our title on purpose. So it's set, strategize, succeed. So research shows that 80% of people who set New Year's resolutions fail. And guess by what month, Kyle? You know the answer, but guess what by month?
I think February.
February. And so the question is, why? And so for me, a lot of it has to do with strategizing and also employing certain other research-based methodologies. For example, did you know out of a university in California that if you actually write down a goal, you're about 46% more likely to achieve the goal?
Let me ask you this real quick about that. And I'm not sure if you know this. Does it have to be physically written down or can it be digital? Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that. I would assume it's similar.
Yeah.
But I can't speak to that. The study I'm referring to said writing it down. But then there's some additional layers, which is super cool that I know you and I as friends and colleagues employ, which is social accountability. So I'm making a goal. I share it with you. Now I've become socially accountable to somebody I know, love, and respect. And then the trifecta, the third part of this that blows my mind. Oh, sorry, I forgot to say the statistics. So if you have social accountability, now you're about 65% more likely to achieve it. And if you add in setting a goal, a deadline rather, a date, putting it in your calendar, now they claim you're upwards of 95% of the way there to achieve your goal. Like, how nuts is that, right?
95% is crazy. Now, let me ask you this about that, and I'm not sure if you know the answer. At the 95%, is that all three or is that just the one?
If I remember correctly, it had to do with all three.
Yeah.
Because it becomes an increasing multiplier, in my term, where you're writing it down, there's a kinesthetic transfer, you're making it real, you're then bringing in somebody you know, love, and trust, and then, oh yeah, you're setting a deadline, right? And so I find it really fascinating. I've seen it in my own life work time and time again. And so for a lot of people, they get stressed out at trying to also change too much, particularly in the beginning. I've really, the older I've gotten, the more I've embraced small changes so that I can celebrate those small changes rather than, you know, try to eat the whole frog, as the phrase goes.
What I love about what you just said too is that one, it's free. Like,
Yeah.
it doesn't cost you anything
Yeah.
to write it down,
Yeah.
to tell a friend you're going to do this, and to
Yeah.
put something in your calendar. I mean, it doesn't cost you anything except for maybe 5 minutes total of time. Another
Totally.
thing, I like what you said that we mentioned on our last podcast, which was really about setting boundaries, was starting with something small.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's where people go too hard with New Year's resolutions, is like, I'm 50 pounds overweight and I'm gonna have a six pack. And it's like,
Yeah.
let's just like go to the gym one time in 2 weeks, right? Just
Yeah.
like go to the gym one time,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. No,
Then,
that's
okay, you're getting better. Okay, and then maybe you do it like once a week, and
you
then maybe
know,
it's twice a week, and then you kind of build up to it. It becomes part of who you are.
it's interesting because right before this, I was sharing with you that just yesterday I hired a virtual fitness coach. And that's part of accountability. And so by telling you this, now I'm adding in social accountability. I do need to think about the deadline. Like, what am I gunning towards, if you will? But here's what I'll say. He asked me something really interesting. He said, how many days a week do you envision working out? And which days do you feel you'll be most likely to do so? And I thought, that's a damn good question. I had thought about it, but not in those terms. And so my answer to him was, I'm not going to go nuts. I used to when I was very in shape. It was, 4 to 6 times a week. I'm not looking to go there. I don't have it. My life is different now. And so
And a
what
lot
I,
of the research is showing you only need 3 days.
correct. And so what I said to him was, okay, I want to do 3 days a week and let's exclude Thursday, Friday.
Because that's
Why?
when you're traveling.
That's when I'm traveling. So I'm kind of excited about that because I'm setting myself up for success, all about strategizing, to really be able to succeed at my goal. I love our title. Can you tell? So yeah.
Well, what I have seen with myself, so this is kind of funny because we're talking about health right now, but that's not all we're talking about in this
Right.
episode. We're going to be talking about production goals in your
Yep.
practice. We're going to be talking about health goals, business goals, friendship goals, relationship goals,
Yeah.
all having to do with the world of being a dentist too, you
Yeah,
know, because
yeah.
we're humans outside of being a dentist.
Yeah.
One thing that I do every year, and you know this, is
Yeah.
that I write myself a letter and I send it to myself a year later. So I
Yep.
usually write it on like the 30th, sometimes the 31st, depending on what's happening. You know, I have kids, so we don't really go out on the 31st. So usually we're just at home. So I usually write myself a letter. I reflect on what the past year was, and I also set goals for the following year. So it's kind of like a gratitude challenge, but also a goal setting challenge for me too.
Yes.
And one of the things that I wanted to do this year was just let's get in the best shape of your life. Like that was really my goal. But I made it specific. I said I wanted to gain 10 pounds of muscle. I wanted to get to the point of where I could take what's called your Gracie Combatives belt test, which is a jujitsu thing that I am now ready for. So I hit that goal. I actually didn't start going, I didn't get a gym membership. I was working at home. I didn't get a gym membership until March.
Oh,
Okay, so
okay.
it took me like 3 months to,
Yep.
okay, figure out which gym I want to go to that's close to my house and which one has open access to where I can go after my kids go to bed, because that's usually
Oh,
when
nice.
I go to the gym. So I found one, wasn't until March. I hit my gaining 10 pounds of muscle goal in 2 months
That's amazing.
from March.
I didn't realize that because when I saw you just what a month or two, a month ago ish. I mean, you look great, but I didn't realize. I mean, 10 pounds of muscle is a lot. I mean, you're tall and
Well,
slender,
I actually
so
gained 20 pounds.
that's amazing.
So tw I did 10 pounds in 2 months. I did 20 pounds in 4 months.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And that's not easy. You know, it's so interesting. It just, depends on your body type. For some people, it's hard to lose weight. For some people, it's hard to gain weight. And both are hard. Let's just call it what it is. And so for you, as tall as you are, and as the kind of frame that you had to put on 20 pounds of muscle in 4 months, it's amazing.
I
That's
mean,
amazing.
now, you know, I've put on some fat with that. So now my goal is to come down a
Yeah.
few pounds of fat, basically.
Right.
But I set that goal and I achieved it. And I think so much of it was because, well, I told my wife that I was doing it. I put money into it.
Nice.
See, I bought a gym membership, and around my house, gym memberships aren't cheap. They're not crazy, but I'm spending $1,000 a year about on a gym membership, right? I was also getting protein powder and doing this kind of stuff. So like I had spent time and money and effort on this. And like you and I talk about, it's a skill. Just like anything else, right? I gained a new skill by putting time and money and effort into it. I started watching YouTube videos on it. I started talking with friends that are, in great shape that I emulate. I started hanging around them more. They started giving me tips. I even work out with them sometimes. And so it's all of what we talk about on this podcast in general that everything can be a skill.
And I what I heard you say, which is really important that I want to point out, is the fact that you set a goal and then you superseded the goal, which very often happens. And so, that book, Make Your Bed First Thing in the Morning, that's all based on research as well, relative to typically when you set a goal, you supersede the goal because you're setting the time aside to do so in order to make it happen, right? And
And
so,
I'll tell you one thing that helped me in my goal was that social accountability. So when I put my kids to bed, I usually lay in the bed with my son. He doesn't like to go to bed alone. And then I get up when he's done. My wife's usually hanging out in another room. Maybe she's reading a book. When I walk in and see her, she goes, "Are you going to the gym?"
I
So
love
there's almost like a guilt, like, oh shoot, my wife expects me to go to the gym now. And by no means is she's not pressuring me at all, actually. She'd rather have me stay home with her. But I heard someone say, I can't remember who it was. It may have been Alex Hormozi again that I talked about last episode, but saying become the identity of the person you want to be. And so part of my identity became someone that goes to the gym.
So James Clear talks about that in Atomic Habits too. There's outcome-based habits and there's identity-based habits. So the outcome-based habits is what people are used to, which is I want to get in shape, I'm going to lose 20 pounds, I want to, that's an outcome. He flips it to more of an identity-based. I'm a person that values my health, therefore I'm going to the gym. And so it's a slight twist, but yet an important twist, particularly because, as Mel Robbins would say, motivation is garbage. If you wait, I love that quote so much. If you wait until you're ready, it's the right time, blah, blah, blah. Good luck. It's never going to happen, right?
Yeah, discipline is the way to do it instead of motivation, right?
I also wanted to, because we had talked about, I want to point out what I do at the end of the year. So you send yourself a letter. What I do is the same but different. And so I always look at my, not literally calendar, although sometimes on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. And I think, okay, when am I going to sit down and review my year? Typically it's in the morning with a cup of coffee because I usually get up before Michael does.
You do it
So
before the new year or after?
it depends on the year and where we are, what we're doing, but it's no later than January 1st. Let's put it. And so I go through the year and I think about all the great things that happened. I think about the challenges I've overcome. And I reflect on that because, we've talked about this several times, my concept of success amnesia, that, we belittle and forget all the small steps that led to the big wins, right? And so I also then think about my goals for the year. Now, since I've been doing this full time, that's been altered ever so slightly. Usually my business goal settings I'm doing throughout the fourth quarter typically, but my personal goals I certainly do on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. And so same thing, different cadence, different rhythm, but think about, listeners, what we're both doing. We're both, reflecting, and we're also forecasting or future casting, I guess you could say, so that we have something to go back to and then celebrate our wins, right? So,
I think what you're doing too, that goes back to my dreams concept. One of them is appreciation or gratitude, and you're doing the same thing. You're doing both in retrospective,
Yes.
having gratitude, like you said, all the things you've overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, because everybody has hard things throughout
Yeah,
our year,
totally.
and how proud you are, how you got to this point, and you're also looking ahead.
Yeah.
And do you share those with friends or family or Michael or anybody?
I usually do, yeah, because I usually forget, like everybody else, all the great stuff that's happened and, focused on some of the challenging things. And I've truly gotten to a point in my life where I'll identify those challenging things and ask, what did I learn from that? Or what was the true outcome from that situation? Because I've had some challenging things happen this year that for a month or two were really quite negative in my mind, which are now I look at as blessings. So it's important to kind of look at it that way. What I'll also say is I started doing something by accident. So we're filming this the week after Thanksgiving. And so I started this what I want to make a tradition, you got one, of filming close friends and family and colleagues as well, individual 20 to 75 second videos of gratitude, thanks, and they're all individualized. And here's why I bring it up. I did almost 50 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, I got into it. Can you tell? About halfway through, I had such a feeling of joy and elation that I only then was like, oh, yeah, wait a minute. It's because of this. And then I thought to myself, well, Martin, have you been listening to your own lectures? So, but it's taking the time to film a video to you and my best friend David and my family. It was so uplifting. I don't even have words for it. And so now I'd like to kind of add that to my tradition because holy smokes, did I enjoy it. It was so much fun. So much fun.
Yeah. Well, the some of the research on that is too when you can experience other people being appreciated, it really impacts your mental health and does bring you that elation and joy. I think I've
Totally.
shared this story before, but whenever we get a bunch of, people will send us candy or something, especially when I was working clinically and they used to send it to the office, right? Big boxes and baskets from the specialists. And I'd have so much stuff. My wife would be like, we don't want this in the house, like get rid of this stuff. But then usually starting in December or in January, I was traveling again. And so I would always bring the flight attendants chocolates and things. And you walk onto a plane and you hand someone you've never met before a full-size chocolate. They're like, wait, what? Why are you sure? What? Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Like, and they come back and talk to you afterward and say, oh, you just made my day. I was really having it was a hard holiday season with all the travel. And it's like one of my favorite things to do is give these flight attendants chocolate or candy or
100%.
something.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
And it's also because I get to experience them enjoy, not enjoying it, eating it, but like receiving it.
Yeah, totally.
And
Totally.
that's what some of the research shows was like giving a gift or having gratitude. The best way to do it is when you can see the other person receive it.
Yes, totally. 100%. 100%.
So
Yeah, in fact, that reminds me, I
let's
gotta get some chocolate for my flights for this.
yeah, no, it's so fun. It's like such a small thing. And it really makes people's days. Let's talk about production goals because it's a big one. This is something you and I talk about a lot. And I think it's something we need to talk about, especially in this podcast, this episode. How do you strategize, and how do you succeed with production goals? And
So,
I will add into that, sorry to interrupt you. I will add into that planning for your vacation within those production goals.
And I want to actually add something else in too, which you and I didn't even talk about, but I was on Dental Nachos this week, and there was a dentist who posted, "What do I do for holiday bonuses?" And I want to get back to that too, because my mind started to explode, and I was like, "Oh my God, like this, that question just showed me a whole bunch of stuff that we can plan, that we can make go away by planning, but we'll get there." The first thing in any planning process is to know where you are. Unless you're in your first to third year out of school, then it becomes an extraordinarily simple process. How many days did you work? What did you make? What's your daily production? And then you can break it down per hour, et cetera. And then if you choose to, you can get more structured and more specific relative to, you know, the percent of Crown and Bridge and the percent of Simple Restorative, et cetera. But at its core, what is our baseline? And particularly if you've been in practice for several years, what is the average production per day from the last, let's just say, 3 to 5 years? That's going to give you a damn good idea of what you do on average. That's a very important word, per day, because sometimes you're going to blow it away and some days you're going to be like, why did I get out of bed? So once you have your baseline, you know, if nothing else changed, how many days a year you would need to work next year in order to meet that same production goal. And so it literally becomes as simple as that, if we're not even looking for growth, to then figure out, okay, so if I'm going to, you know, 48 weeks a year, 4 days a week, that's what, 96 days or so 90, that's not 96. What am I saying? Yeah, it is 96. So
I'm the wrong person.
Yeah. So then you just back in, it's like, okay, so these are the number of days I have to work. Therefore, how many days do I have to myself?
Mm-hmm.
Of those days that I have to myself, how many days am I going to engage for vacation, me time, and then of course, continuing education.
Yeah.
And that's the basis of it. Now, in order to figure out where and how much you want to grow, that's a more individualistic discussion, right? Because we need to take all things into consideration. You know, if you take insurance reimbursements, who are you getting them from? Is there any change there? Are you looking to back off from insurance reimbursements? You know, are you looking to
grow your hygiene department, for example?
Exactly. That you took the words out of my mouth. And are you looking to focus on case acceptance? And in what area are you looking to focus on case acceptance? So the growth is, I'm not going to say harder, it's just more of a detailed discussion. But what you need to do to maintain where you were, or let's say plus 10% to account for typical inflation, is a very simple mathematical process. It really is. It's something that I believe every dentist needs to do so that they understand where they're headed. Because in most cases, yes, you can take time off if we're doing things in a more pointed, strategic fashion.
Yeah, I like how you started with knowing where you are.
Yeah.
It goes back to our awareness, realization thing that we harp on so much is,
yeah.
I think most dentists, owner practices, even associates, don't know what their daily production
or
even their goal.
Yep.
I've said this on the podcast before, but when I started working with my dad, you know, it was towards the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
He knew when I came in there, he said, you know, I try to do 5K a day. Mm-hmm. That was his goal, was to do 5K a day. And, you know, that meant doing a few crowns, maybe doing a denture, hygiene. I mean, that was kind of it. So he knew what we were getting into.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, sometimes we did 4,000, sometimes we did 10,000, right? But it all equaled out. And what he did too was he shared that with the front office team.
Mm-hmm.
The whole team knew what the goal was.
Totally.
And I don't want people to listen to this and think that dentistry was being done just to hit the goal. That's not the case, okay?
Nope.
But when you have, he was a higher volume practice than my practice, but let's say he saw, I don't know, 15 patients a day between hygiene and, you know, restorative and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was usually there.
Yeah.
And the team knew to schedule, okay, we have a potential crown here.
Mm-hmm.
This one is going to be an RPD. We have this partial here.
Yep.
We have scaling root planing happening twice a day on the hygiene exam. And it kind of all worked out.
Yeah. And the other thing that I would strongly recommend from a baseline perspective is you've got to understand what your case acceptance is. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't mean assume. I mean, know what your case acceptance is. I used to work with hundreds of specialists, and it was rather fascinating because we did this on purpose. We would ask them, what do you think your case acceptance is, either globally or for something specific like implants? And most of the time, they were way off, either under or over, either way. So numbers don't lie. So by understanding what we're producing a day, by understanding what our case acceptance percentages are, and also by understanding of how productive we are per hour based on certain types of procedures, are some additional critical baseline metrics to understand, because that then therefore will influence what you need to improve. It might be case acceptance, it might be speed, it might be referring more endodontic procedures, or referring those implant placements.
But wait, Martin, if I'm referring stuff out, doesn't mean that I'm losing money in my practice?
No, because it all comes down to production per hour. And so if you're charging, the numbers are
Irrelevant.
inconsequential, but if you're charging $1,000 for a molar endo, but it takes you 3 hours to do it,
And
and
you're
you're
charging
charging,
$1,000 for a crown, takes you 45 minutes.
then do the math, folks.
Hello.
Right. Yeah. So, and look, there's lots of much more smarter people than I that are consultants that do this on a regular basis. I mean, I've seen this hundreds of times. The absolute monstrous amounts of growth, in certain cases, exponential growth, when we get very clear on certain simple metrics to then drive to the improvement of those metrics. Because the truth of the matter is that there's not 100 of them. There's probably, depending on who you are and what you do, about a half dozen, maybe to a dozen individual metrics, and that's it. And if you focus on those, you're going to end up skyrocketing moving forward.
What I want to remind people too is, in order to track these metrics, you have to record these metrics. So this is the problem, me being like an AI guy, AI is all data. And so a lot of people, when with Pearl, when we were integrating with certain people, they would say, well, oh, can you like track how a certain provider is doing case acceptance, let's say. And I'd say, well, yeah, that's easy. Like you have the data, we can look through it and then use the AI to help analyze it. But then we'd go in and they would have three providers, but everything's being put on one person's by one person's name.
Oh my gosh, I've seen that so many times.
So this is very important that you need to get granular with your data if you want to learn from your data. So when we talk about case acceptance, I think what a lot of people don't realize is you have to say, this person was presented this case and they said yes or no in your practice management system. And every modern practice management system has that now. That's one of the advantages of having a digital practice management system is you can look at this stuff at scale, you can query this, but unless you're recording that, it's going to be very challenging. You may be able to get to it, right? Well, I think we told them about it. They scheduled for this crown, but they didn't do this implant. So, okay. I guess they said, did they say no to it? Or did they say that they wanted to wait till next year? So, the more granular you are on your data, the more you can analyze it and the more you can learn from it.
And the other thing I'll say too is, one of my mentors, Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, wrote a book called The Pursuit of Perfection. And so many dentists pursue perfection in so many ways. And so when it comes to this kind of stuff, there's a bunch of different ways you can skin this cat. And so please don't get paralyzed in, well, what if I do it this way? What if I do it that way? Just start. Because if you start collecting and collating the data, you're going to be a hell of a lot better off than you were without doing so.
If we're going to give people a very simple way of starting, let's say we have someone who's listening to this. They've had their practice for 5 years. They're still relatively new as an owner, right? And they're like, oh crap, I don't know what my daily production goal is. That's the easy one. You have that. You can look back, see how many times, look at the average days that you were there
Mm-hmm.
and go your total production for the
Yeah.
year. And that's a very easy one to do that there's not really a lot of data that you need on that.
No.
Your practice management system has all that. Even doing that and knowing that one number is a huge advantage for this coming year.
Oh,
And if you
100%.
say, hey, I just want to maintain, or you know what, I'd like to grow 20%. Okay, let's say you were producing $3,000 a day, right? Okay, so add 20% to that. Now your new goal is 3,000 plus that 20%, right?
Go.
It's not that challenging to set that goal. And I think why Martin and I are so, we talk about this all the time with planning your production is because of what it allows you to do, which is plan your time off.
Amen.
Because what people that take our courses and our in-person workshops, they come and say, I can't take any time off. Like, how am I supposed to be a human? And how am I supposed to reset? How am I supposed to focus on my mental health? I can't take any time off. And we kind of go back to this topic of setting production goals.
Absolutely. And so, and one thing I love, it's an Amy Morganism. Amy Morgan is such an amazing human. She talks about brownie stuffing. And brownie stuffing is the idea like you just had a full meal and you really want dessert, so you stuff that last brownie in there. And so her analogy here is that your daily goal is your daily goal. And when you hit your daily goal, great. Don't stay an extra hour to fit that extra brownie in because the shoe might drop tomorrow. Like, no. We're planning to plan and we got to work the plan. And if the plan's not working, that's okay. Let's change it. But let's not live in this constant state
More,
of
more, more, more.
scarcity. Yeah, and fear, right?
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk about this post that came up on Dental Nachos because I thought it was fascinating.
Tell me.
So basically the person wanted to do the right thing and was asking the brain, the mind trust of 70,000 dentists or so. We didn't exactly hit goal this year. What do I do with my team? And so there was all kinds of answers. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. This in an ideal situation, this question would have already been answered. Because if we have a written compensation plan per year that includes reward-based compensation, then there is no question. It's either X or Y, right? And what concerned me as the team guy, because there was a lot of discussion around this, rightfully so, is that, well, they got X last year, so now they're expecting X this year. And I'm like, that's simply because we haven't provided structure and clarity, aka Google's Project Aristotle. So that everybody knows where we're headed, because whatever it is we get paid as reward compensation should never be a surprise. And what I mean by that is if we hit certain metrics, we're going to get certain rewards. If we don't hit certain metrics, we're not going to get certain rewards. Now, if you, like most dentists do, very much care about their team, and there was some talk about, well, we do a nice dinner, blah, blah, blah. Then always do your nice dinner and have your team count on the nice dinner or whatever the nice dinner is for you. But if you're sitting there saying to yourself, what do I do with holiday bonuses this year? I immediately know that you have no formal reward compensation plan that is complete, documented for your team. So what are your thoughts about that? Because we didn't even talk about this before we hit record. What do you think?
This it strikes a chord with me because when I was going through burnout, this was a big point of contention. Because, we bought a practice, so we inherited some team members, which they're great. We love them. But there were things that were done previously that didn't really make sense, both good and bad. And I was really okay. So I was at a low point. This was like maybe 2 months before like my darkest point. So I was very far down. And I think we were planning on doing a dinner, and I think we were going to do some type of bonus. And we had someone come to us and say, "Can we not do the dinner and just give us the money that you would spend on the dinner?"
Got it.
And then we also had someone say, "When are we getting our Christmas bonus? Or when are we getting our holiday bonus? And is it going to be the same as last year?" And I lost it. I was, first of all, very reactive at this point. I was not in a good place to be having these discussions. But I lost it and was like, "These people are, taking us for granted. And this was a hard year and da 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 da, everything, right?" And it really did come down to the fact that we didn't set expectation, set boundaries, and communicate it. And so I'm like kind of reliving that as you're saying it. I'm remembering how offended I was, how mad I was, how unappreciated I felt, and how I felt like it was all about the money for them, right? So that's where I'm thinking about it. So
You know what I'm thinking that I've never thought of before? Because the word entitlement was used a lot in that
yes,
threat, post-thread,
that is
which,
a word that, yeah,
right.
I definitely
And
can sympathize with.
entitlement, I've never thought of it this way before, but entitlement happens without clear, written guidance, expectations, policies, etc.
I'm
That's
gonna
where
write that
entitlement
down so
comes
that we
from.
remember that.
Yeah. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, think about it. Why are they feeling entitled? Because they got it before. Well, what does it say about getting it now? Well, you know the old saying that I don't mind writing the tax check because that means I made more money. Not everybody agrees with that, but you get the idea. So we should be happy that we're paying reward compensation because with all things being equal, the only
Paid
time we're ever
equal.
going to be doing that is when we did well,
Yeah.
right?
How do you recommend doing end of year bonus, holiday bonus?
You know, honestly, there's eight which ways to Sunday to skin a cat. And truthfully, there's historical precedents that could play a role. There's all kinds of things that could play a role into this. And so I think, truthfully, I'm not avoiding the question. I just don't want to mislead anybody because there's a lot of variables that are there. But here's what I will say. First of all, like I said already, there's so many wonderful consultants out there that can help you with this stuff in terms of structure, in terms of documentation, like our friends at Bent Erickson can help out with that as well. They're not a sponsor, they're just really good friends of this program. But what I will absolutely say with beyond a shadow of a doubt is your reward-based compensation must include subjective behavioral elements. It's got to. Because and we had this at Spear. I mean, I was evaluated on objective and subjective criteria, and I had no problem with it whatsoever,
And how
right?
many times a year did they meet with you to go over that?
Once a quarter.
Exactly. And so what I want to say with this is you have a company like Spear that you worked with for decades or a decade or more, and how they run a business as opposed to how we dentists run our businesses. We need to have quarterly meetings with our team, quarterly checkups. Now, you want to do this to set expectations, set boundaries, and communicate this. If they're doing well, praise them and tell them how great they're doing and remind them. If it's just like how I talk about talking with patients about expectations with complications, you have to remind them every time. It's just like this. You have to remind them at the end of the first quarter of the year what their holiday bonus may be. And then you do it at the middle of the year. Again, and at the third quarter, so that the last quarter, they know exactly what it is. And if it's happening or not, and if they're angry or disappointed or not, it is what it is. And you've been talking about it, and you've been setting the expectation from the beginning of the year.
Oh, 100%. And here's the other thing that a lot of people miss. I can't remember if I learned this from Amy Morgan or MTS Manji, which is at the end of a year or beginning, whatever's appropriate, you present each employee with not a disclosure, with a document of what their full compensation is. Because depending on the practice, it is not just the hourly wage. It's insurance, it's 401k, it's CE credits, it's, you know, if you took a trip, you know, don't nickel and dime for, you know, pizza on Wednesday when, you know, the Ivanclar rep came in, like, come on. But it's a full disclosure, if you will, or documentation of the totality of compensation that that individual got for being part of that practice entity. And that's something that is very often overlooked as well.
Yeah, that's a really great example. And I think it goes back to just setting that expectation, communicating it, and setting the boundaries. I think we may need to do an entire episode on bonuses. And maybe we could bring an expert on, because I don't think either one of us are experts. We have our opinions on things, but maybe we could bring an expert on for that,
I have a
because I
couple
think that would
ideas.
be really helpful for a lot of people. And I'm gonna make a note as we're talking. I want to finish today's episode by talking about mental health goals. So this was something that I did back in 2018. It wasn't really a New Year's resolution, but it was really a must-have because I was in a very dark place. But as I'm writing this down for future episodes, why don't you talk about how you think about setting mental health goals, or it can even be like personal relationship goals or priorities?
Yeah, something near and dear to my heart for a number of reasons. One of which is, look, I'm going to say it here live, well, recorded live. You know, I'm a human being too. And this past year, I did not set apart enough time for myself. I just didn't. You know, I was kind of rebuilding up this business and I took time off, but I didn't take time off in the same cadence that I used to. And I definitely felt at times that I needed to. So I'm preaching with the choir, not to the choir, if you will. So really taking a look at, you know, what gives you juice, as the term goes, and who you want to do it with, and how often you need to do that. And, you know, whether it's time by yourself or time with your spouse or time with your family, taking that mental health break is incredibly important. And so whether that's, you know, once every 2 months, once every quarter, everybody's different. However, everybody needs to do so. And the idea of self-care being mushy-gushy woo-woo flies in the face of the true research of su business success for individuals. Those that take time to recharge are more successful typically than those who don't. So as you're planning your practice production goals and your daily production goals, this is all part of that process. So if you want to work, you know, 96 days, you know, in that year, 48, I think my math is off. Hold on. So I don't think so. What, 48 times four. Yeah, 192. I knew that was wrong. Sorry about
Okay.
it. So if you're gonna work, I knew that was wrong. So if you're gonna work
Hey, I used
190,
to teach algebra in high school, and I had no idea what that was called.
so if you're gonna work 192 days, that gives you know, 365 of those days. So you have 173 remaining. Now, granted, a good number of those, you know, 104 of those days are weekends, right? So, you know, if we take 104 and we remove 73-ish, that's a month, right? So what are we going to do in a month relative to vacation, CE, and our own mental health, right? And so that's where I would start. It's life planning. It's not practice planning, right? I'm super excited because I very much felt that I didn't take enough time this year. And you know, this idea came up. And so I'm going to go on this rafting trip in July or August with this guy who's a therapist, whose dad started this company in the 80s, taking people on river rafting trips. And I'm like crazy excited about this.
Yeah.
And it's something for myself, but I looked at my schedule, and what do I know? As a speaker and a facilitator, the last 2 weeks in July and the first 2 weeks of August, I'm not usually doing anything.
Nothing happens. Yeah.
So this was part of my plan. And mm-hmm. so I guess to answer your question a different way, how do we plan for our mental health? In the same damn way we plan for everything else, because it becomes a yearly life plan, not a yearly practice plan, I think is what I would say.
Yeah. And the advice I would give would be make your mental health a priority first.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're not going to think about your mental health in your planning unless it's a priority.
Correct.
It's how a lot of us will put production over health, for example. It's like we had a whole episode about priorities and value, or values and then prioritizing your values, mm-hmm. right? And so I think what most dentists don't do is they don't make their mental health a priority at all. So then they don't put any time, money, and effort into it.
Yeah.
And what Martin and I see is the people that make it a priority, number one, and then put time and money and effort into it mm-hmm. are the ones that, surprise, surprise, have better mental health.
You 100%.
Know, they do things like take our course. They go mm-hmm. to a retreat. They focus on their health. They take some classes on communication. They take our online courses, not just talking about our courses, but this is something you could do, put it on the schedule and say, you know what? I'm going to go to California. Yeah. I'm going to hang out with these weird guys that I listen to on podcasts all the time. And I'm going to make my mental health a priority this year. And you've seen this with Martin and I. We've made this a priority in our lives. And it's worked. Guess what? Yeah. Our mental health is better. Is it perfect? No. Is it way better than it was? Oh, for sure. I mean, it's 90% better for me than I was. And that's because I've prioritized things that are important to me.
And I think I'd also like to say this, like for many years when I was younger in particular, I equated like traveling somewhere exotic with, you know, the thing called vacation in air quotes, or time mm-hmm. off in air quotes. And, you know, it never has to be exotic or extraordinary. It just has to be different, right? Now, I've learned something about myself, which is I travel a lot and I work from home a lot. Okay, great. And when I take time off, if I don't have a lot to do and I'm also electing not to work, which is also my home, staying home isn't the best idea. I need to go somewhere. Even if I jump in the car 2 hours and go up to Flagstaff, it doesn't need to be expensive, extraordinary, or exquisite. It just needs to be different. And I want everybody to hear this too, because we put so much judgment on time off and vacations. And, you know, the internet is such a lovely influence on this, right? It's like, well, Dr. Jones's family went to Disneyland and did the VIP tour. It's
right.
Like, who cares? Right.
Yeah.
So it just needs to be different. It needs to give you a recharge. It needs to fill your cup, all those wonderful sayings. But it doesn't need to be, you know, going to Bora Bora or something.
So. Yeah. We do a staycation like one or two nights in a local city, because my wife has a credit card that every year she gets like one or two nights for free or something.
Exactly.
And so it's this great place, super close, like 20 minutes from our house. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they have a pool. We don't have a pool. They have a pool and our kids play there, and they have a nice restaurant. And we go there sometime. I can't remember when we go, in July or August or something. Mm-hmm. And so fun. And it's like so cheap, so nice. And I also want to say too, what you were talking about is, like sometimes staycation, if you're literally staying at your house, can be challenging because you're tempted to do work, especially if you're a type of person that works from home.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that, you know, whenever it was last week, that was Thanksgiving, I took that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday very light,
mm-hmm.
one or two meetings in a day. So I had a lot of the time off. Oh my gosh, I got so much done.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about work done.
Yeah.
I got like organizational stuff done. We cleaned out the closets. I washed my cars that I had
I
been
was just
waiting to
gonna
do
say,
for
I
a
saw
few
you
weeks.
wash your cars.
Yeah. Like, and I really enjoyed that kind of stuff. Like doing some gardening around the house. It was really, really nice to have that time. But I blocked that time off 6 weeks ahead. So I said, and why I blocked it off, because we were maybe gonna go on vacation, but I blocked it off. And then I said, hey, okay, this is what I'm gonna do here. And I was able to plan that. And that was kind of a mental health aspect for me, was my kids were home from school. They didn't go to school that week, so we could go to the beach in the mornings and go to the park and do this kind of stuff and have lunch together and, you know, put my daughter down for a nap. And I was able to really be there. And that's part of my, you know, when I think of mental health, I really think of relationships too.
And you just hit the nail on the head of what we covered in our last episode, which is not only boundaries, but self boundaries, right? So if you're going to sequester that time, you darn better, out of respect for yourself, take the time to, wash the car and enjoy it, clean out the closet and enjoy it, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, even today I had a meeting that got canceled, hour and a half meeting that got canceled, another podcast recording. And I was actually so excited that it got canceled because I really needed to organize my home office here. And I did it, and now I'm looking around and everything's nice and organized. And you know, my kids haven't been in here going crazy. So it was really a nice day.
That's great. That's great.
So this was a really nice topic. I think a very
Absolutely.
important topic. Remember, it's set, strategize, and succeed. And that's really how you should think about this next year, setting your goals. I mean, we, Martin and I, are such proponents of dentistry. We want dentistry to improve. We want dentists to be happier. We want dentists to make more money, to have more time with their families, to be healthier. That we come here giving you guys this advice because we've lived through it. And we've helped thousands of dentists around the world live through it and change. And so I really hope you take what we talked about today and do it. Set a goal. I mean, I would even say set a goal, post it on Instagram and tag us. And
I love that. I love it.
we'll keep you responsible.
That's
We'll
fantastic.
be your social, what's the word I'm looking for? Accountability.
Accountability.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, we really appreciate you guys listening. We love doing these for you. Martin and I have so much fun. If you're interested in getting that early bird discount for Lightside Live, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, click on links, and go to our 2-day workshop. And you can get that. I can't remember. It saves you a few hundred bucks or something, right? It saves you
Yeah,
like
it's
175
150.
bucks, something
Yeah,
like that.
150.
150 bucks, yeah. So go there, get that, and we hope to see you May 9th and 10th. Come hang out with us. And we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's right. Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for all your support.